VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you, friends, for joining us on Crosstalk today, and really a must-listen-to program. Can I encourage you to listen with both ears today and take notes, friends? We've got a lot of information we need to pass on to you today. The 2024 Summit of the Future is now past, but its impact and effects upon the future are daunting. I mean, through the years, we have lent innumerable programs on here on Crosstalk to Agenda 21, then Agenda 2030. And my friends, the matters unfolded at the Summit of the Future just puts the acceleration of the 2030 agenda on steroids. I mean, the Summit of the Future was all about the adoption of three agreements: a pact for the future, a global digital compact, and a declaration on future generations. The United Nations called this a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reimagine the multilateral system and steer humanity on a new course. Well, friends, the dust cloud left behind by the Summit of the Future just totally destroys our national sovereignty and the sovereignty of every nation around the world. It grants control to global dictates. Don't take my word for it. Here is the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres as he discussed this pact for the future at the Summit of the Future. Here's what he had to say in his opening comments.
The pact for the future is about turbocharging the sustainable development goals and the Paris Agreement, accelerating a just transition away from fossil fuels, and securing a peaceful and livable future for everyone on our planet.
Oh, friends, doesn't that give you a warm and fuzzy feeling? Joining us today, Alex Newman, award-winning international freelance journalist, author, researcher, educator, and consultant, senior editor for The New American, co-author of Crimes of the Educators, and also Deep State, the invisible government behind the scenes, and Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. He is founder of Liberty Sentinel. Alex, you were there as a journalist covering this event. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to break down the three components of the Summit of the Future, but if you would just make an opening comment as to the very diabolical framework for the summit.
Well, I would start by encouraging everybody to read this for themselves, because it's almost too much to believe, and mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to just take my word for these things, but the way they are framing this is we are transforming the UN. So, you know, when the UN was founded, ostensibly at least, what they told humanity was, this is just about peace. We're just an organization to promote security, diplomacy, so that governments don't go to war with each other when that is not necessary. And as you read the Pact for the Future, what's really striking is they have completely thrown that out the window. It's just a very minor component now of what they're doing. And they actually see themselves, and they say so, right at the center of everything. Mm-hmm. Education, the environment, the economy, the digital world, artificial intelligence, future generations, sustainable development, business, all of it needs to orbit around the UN, to the point where it is becoming, as they described it, the UN 2.0. In other words, the next generation of the UN. And one of the things that Secretary General Antonio Guterres said as he was starting off this conference, and I'm sure this was rehearsed and focus group because they already had it printed on posters and stickers, was here's what he says: we can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents. In other words, the old systems that our grandparents built, those aren't useful for the present day anymore. They're not going to be useful for our grandchildren. We need new and supposedly improved systems to be able to take care of these new challenges. So this is a breathtaking power grab. It is a massive assault on sovereignty and individual liberty and the family and so much more. And unfortunately, as you pointed out, Jim, there has been very, very little information about this publicly available to most of the people in the world.
So let's hit the main three elements. Actually, Alex, we could park a couple days on every one of these, but let's begin with this pact for the future that accelerates the 2030 agenda. Let me correct that. It doesn't just accelerate it. I'll use the words of the Secretary General. He uses the term turbocharges it. What is this pact for the future?
Yeah, and that is the word that's used in the pact as well. We're going to turbocharge the implementation of the 2030 agenda. So this is an incredibly complex and an incredibly wide-ranging document. It deals with everything from sustainable development to free speech to the economy to education to emergencies. And we'll focus on different parts of this, but maybe we should start with emergencies because I think this is probably one of the biggest threats in this document. If you go to action item 54, there were 56 of them total. What you'll find is some really, really important language involving emergencies and complex global shocks. And so I want to read a little bit from that because I think it'll help people understand. And then we'll go back to understand the context that this was existing in. So they say in the pact, we recognize the need for a more coherent, cooperative, coordinated, and multidimensional international response to complex global shocks and the central role of the United Nations in this regard. And so the context behind that, they also say in the pact that the Secretary General has to come up with new ways to strengthen the United Nations system response to complex global shocks. And so if you're just reading the pact, you might go over that and think, huh, okay, so they're going to come up with some new ways to deal with emergencies. That comes out of a policy document that you and I actually discussed on the program last year, Jim. I wrote my first article about this in April of 2023. It was policy brief number 2 in a series by the Secretary General called Our Common Future. And as you read this, it's less than 30 pages. It basically is Guterres calling on himself to become the dictator of the world in the event that he, at his own discretion, with no checks and balances, no advisors, no court, no committee, if he determines that there is an international emergency. And they give examples of what these international emergencies could be: climate, environment, economy, war, conflict. It could be something in outer space, which I don't know exactly what that means, but I wonder if they're not setting us up for some kind of giant fraud involving aliens or alleged aliens. It could be a black swan event, something unforeseen. So it could be anything. We don't even know what it could be. And they also say it doesn't even have to be global. It might be regional. It might just affect one part of the world, but we're going to call it a global problem anyway. And if and when the Secretary General, at his sole discretion, declares that there is such an emergency, think COVID, for example, then all sectors of society, governments, businesses, religious organizations, individuals, all must recognize, it says, the primary role of intergovernmental organs, that would be the UN, the UN's agencies, Interpol, World Bank, things like this, in decision-making. So they're calling for all power and authority to be concentrated in the hands of the UN in the event of the Secretary General declaring an emergency. Now, it's bad enough that they put this in the policy brief, but by getting it into the Pact for the Future as an action item, they have now given the Secretary General what would be considered in legal language a mandate. And so if he declares, hey, there's an emergency. Maybe it's an economic crisis. Maybe it's Iran launching a bunch of ballistic missiles at Israel. Maybe it's the dollar crashing through the floor. Maybe it's an oil spill. He'll say, hey, I'm just doing what you guys told me to do, right? If you don't like what I'm doing, take it up with the 193 member states of the United Nations that voted by consensus to adopt the Pact for the Future, where they told me this is what I should be doing. So that is very, very frightening. It's actually a blatant assault on liberty, sovereignty, self-government, etc. It's also a ridiculously bad idea, but that is one of the examples of the terrible, terrible things that you'll find in this Pact for the Future.
Well, Alex, and keep in mind, he's already talked about the global climate emergency, the global climate crisis he has referred to. We have seen that take place. We know what's happened with the even with the World Health Organization and the, you know, the global pandemic that has taken place. Any one of these issues can trigger these authoritarian powers for himself.
That's right. And so I want people to just think of the last 4 years. I know they're trying to get us to forget it now, but just imagine the last 4 years. You had, just prior to the emergency, the World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, et cetera, coming together and doing their training exercises, Event 201. What if we had a global pandemic? What would we do? Well, we have to silence everybody. We have to shut down the media. We have to shut down social media, et cetera, et cetera. Then 2020 comes along, the WHO starts putting out all kinds of misinformation and disinformation. Oh, the virus doesn't spread from person to person. There's nothing to worry about. Keep letting those Chinese airplanes land in Italy. Keep letting those Chinese airplanes land in Seattle, land in Los Angeles. No problem at all. It's not contagious. Doesn't spread from person to person. Well, that was a giant lie. That was a giant fraud. Why anybody listened to the World Health Organization when Donald Trump tried to shut down air travel from China is beyond me. Then they started putting out more misinformation. Oh, it didn't come out of a laboratory. This is not a weaponized virus. This is just something that came from a bat, and somebody was eating a bat at a wet market or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a lie and misinformation. But what happened? Well, for the first time in human history, a global organization decided that tyranny was the only way to fight this virus. Tyranny across every spectrum. Censorship on the internet. We had YouTube say that anything that went against what the World Health Organization was saying would be removed from YouTube. We had lockdowns, we had face masks, we had vaccine mandates. Now imagine that, not just for a public health crisis, but for anything, and you get a sense of what they're doing.
Yes, that's what my takeaway is, Alex, is that this is so all-comprehensive and all-encompassing. I mean, we're talking energy, we're talking food supplies, we're talking housing, we're talking our health, gun control, education. I mean, everything falls under this umbrella.
That's right. And again, if people just go back and read that policy brief, they'll find out that they mean anything. Whatever the Secretary General says is an emergency constitutes an emergency. And whenever we have an emergency, again, climate emergency, pandemic, economic crisis, doesn't matter, then everybody must recognize the decision, the primary decision-making authority of the UN and its agencies across every sector of society. So this is frankly crazy. If Joe Biden proposed that, there would be protests everywhere in this country. And yet it just happened at the international level, putting power in the hands of a known socialist, and nobody's paying attention.
The aspect of this, ladies and gentlemen, Alex just read one action point, just one action point. That was number 54 of 56. And Alex, one could go through this action point by action point and just realize this thing is really bad news. And the fact that this really came out without debate. I mean, what do we have? Russia that had a protest against it, and some, what, eight nations that joined with them. But that was quickly shut down.
It was, and I actually wonder if that wasn't an attempt to create a phony narrative, right? Because the Russian government did file a proposal for an amendment. They asked for an amendment that would state very simply, nothing in this pact should be construed to allow the United Nations to interfere in the domestic affairs within the domestic jurisdiction of any particular country. Shouldn't be all that controversial, right? I asked the Secretary General spokesman, he said, oh, this isn't an attack on sovereignty, this is no big deal, right? Well, if it's not an attack on sovereignty, it should be no problem for everybody to say this doesn't give the UN any power to meddle in the domestic affairs of a country.
Right.
Well, Russia and a handful of other governments voted for that. It got shut down overwhelmingly. Over 140 governments voted against it. And still, I will note for the record, Russia allowed this, and all the other governments allowed this to pass by consensus when they could have objected and stopped it.
Yes. And where was the U.S. in all of this?
Cheerleading. Funding at all. In fact, I knew from April of 2023 when I wrote that article about the emergencies powers they were trying to usurp. I contacted the State Department. I said, what does the Biden administration think about this? Are you guys on board? They said, oh, absolutely. We think this is essential for ensuring international cooperation. So they were helping this all along. So were the Chinese communists, by the way, the CCP, as they very, very publicly announced in the days after the Pact for a Future was adopted.
Alex Newman with us here today on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the Summit of the Future. This is global governance on steroids and puts the Secretary General as the world leader, indeed the world leader. All nations would have to succumb to his direction. And that's what they have just passed here at this so-called Summit of the Future. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where do secular scientists say the universe came from?
You know, Chris, it sometimes tickles me when evolutionary scientists mock creation thinking for claiming that creation was ex nihilo, or out of nothing. But then they turn around and talk about the Big Bang, when a single speck of matter exploded to form all the stars and galaxies and planets and people. But, you might ask, where did that speck come from? Some scientists now say it appeared out of nothing as a quantum fluctuation in a vacuum. In other words, matter appeared from nothing, and then it exploded. Which would you rather believe, Evolution ex nihilo or creation ex nihilo? At least in creation, we have a God that is powerful enough to accomplish the job. And that's the Back to Genesis perspective.
Thank you, Dr. John. For more on the foundational principles set forth in Genesis, visit us on the web at icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network. Alex Newman is with us here today and covering. He was there in person at the Summit of the Future, coming back with this report today. And not only on the air with us, but Alex, you have been writing on this and multiple articles you have been doing on this. Where can our listeners access those articles?
Well, thank you. The bulk of my reporting on this is at thenewamerican.com. People can find it if they follow me on X as well. It's AlexNewman_JOU. I did do one article on the educational angle for Freedom Project. You can find it at freedomproject.com. A lot of it is cross-posted at my website, libertysentinel.org. And then I did one big article on this for the Epoch Times, focusing on the Communist Chinese Party's role in all of this and how they celebrated it. So.
Friends, again, the main website there, thenewamerican.com, libertysentinel.org. Alex, I'm looking at your Freedom Project article that you wrote just the other day, and here's the headline: "At Summit of the Future, UN doubles down on indoctrinating children." And let's talk about how this is going to be carried out. How does this get down into the hearts and minds of young people across this globe?
Well, it's been happening for a long time, so this is actually not a new development. The new development here is just that they all agreed that they need to accelerate this process. Now, education is actually one of the main emphases. I mean, it talks about all kinds of things, but one thing that's mentioned more than almost anything else is education. You've got about 24 references to education and schooling, and then, of course, a lot of references to earlier agreements that also deal with education. But I'll just read a couple of those real quick, and then we can break those down, Jim. So they say in the Pact for the Future that to fulfill their potential and secure decent productive work, young people must have access to safe, inclusive, equitable, and quality education.
Where have we heard those words before? Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds real nice, right? I mean, who wouldn't want kids to have safe, inclusive, equitable, quality education? The problem is, what do they mean by that? Let's start with the word quality. Right? I mean, we all, I think, would want children to have quality education. But what does that mean to you versus what does that mean to the Dictators Club? What does that mean to the mass murderer in North Korea who also signed this pact for the future? Is his vision of a quality education going to look anything like your vision as a Christian for a quality education? And the short answer is absolutely not, right? The world's got its understanding of education. Christians, if you read your Bible, have their understanding of education. So when they say that all children must have a quality education, and they leave quality education undefined, that opens the door for massive intrusion. And if you read other UN agreements, they've been very clear about this. For example, the Zhongtian Declaration and the Dakar Framework, these were approved in 1990 and 2000, respectively. They actually say very openly, without even beating around the bush, education needs to change the attitudes, values, beliefs, and behavior of children. They say education is a common and universal responsibility. In other words, it's not the job of the parents, it's not the job of the local school board, it's not even the job of your Supreme Court. It is a UN responsibility, mm-hmm. is what they mean by common and universal responsibility. And they say that all children need to learn from the same standards of learning. And so do you think the mass murderers in Beijing, who slaughtered 100 million of their own people, have the same idea in mind as you do for what kind of education your children ought to be getting? And the answer is self-evidently no. But under these agreements, signed on to by every government in the world, we have to understand that this is where they're going with this. And I'll leave one more little tidbit out there. I know we've talked about this before on the program, Jim, but I just want to remind people, the UN already has what they call a World Core Curriculum. You can find it on UNESCO's website. They have said repeatedly it should be taught to every child in every school in every country on earth. The guy who wrote it, Robert Mueller, Assistant Secretary General of the UN, called the father of global education, in the foreword to the teacher's manual, he actually says that the World Core Curriculum is based on the teachings of Alice Bailey and the Tibetan teacher Jeval Kul. And Alice Bailey, very influential figure in UN circles. She was the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company, which is still around today. It's called the Lucius Trust. And that ascended master, the Tibetan, is a spiritual entity that she claimed to be channeling, who was giving her these ideas on what education and the global government and the new age ought to look like. So this is where they're going with all of this. It's very clear when you peek just beneath the surface of their agreements, and the Pact for the Future will, as they put it in there, turbocharge the efforts to implement all of this.
My. Alex, so we know that, you know, our nation's children, the children of every nation around the world, are all going to be subject to this and to this indoctrination that is taking place to make them good global citizens. That really is the goal. I mean, whereby they will not recognize national sovereignty, but they'll recognize the global dictates that come forth, and everything's for the global common good. There's this, you know, energy crisis here, so therefore we need to modify, you know, the world's use of energy, whatever it may be. There's another component to all of this as well, and it deals with the matter of free speech. And I know that there's just angst in their heart against what they believe is a disinformation and misinformation and those that have the audacity to post something that is contrary to the thought of this global body.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And this is addressed in several different places throughout the pact, including a big segment in the Global Digital Compact and under Objective 3, this whole issue of speech. And so repeatedly throughout this document, governments all over the world, 193 member states, committed themselves and asked the UN to wage vigorous, never-ending warfare against what they call misinformation, disinformation, and hate speech. And so let's start with hate speech. Hate speech is actually a term introduced into the UN lexicon back in the 1970s by none other than the Soviet dictatorship. One of the most murderous governments that has ever existed in human history first came up with the term hate speech and first mainstreamed it within the United Nations. And it was a term, really, to describe anti-Soviet speech, anti-communist speech. Oh, if you don't like what the Soviet Union's government is doing, if you don't like what the CCP is doing, you're anti-Russia, you're anti-China. That's hate speech for you to say that about the Soviet government. So it was essentially a term to describe the speech that the Soviet dictatorship hated. Now, when you look at misinformation and disinformation, they've also been pretty clear about what this means. In fact, the U.S. House of Representatives put out an excellent report saying that these terms actually had been weaponized to censor people, is what our Congress said. And that's exactly what this thing does. It commits governments all over the world to silence speech that they disagree with, that contradicts their narrative. And they are doing this across every front. They want to regulate the internet. They want to regulate the press. They want to bankrupt anyone who won't toe the narrative. And ultimately, we see where this is going in countries like China and in countries like Sweden. Sweden was once a great Christian nation. In 2008, their government actually investigated the Bible, believe it or not, Jim, and their justice ombudsman determined in an official report that they posted on their website that the Bible was hate speech and that it was a violation of Swedish hate speech laws, and that one way to fix this problem was that we could change the language in the Bible. So, folks, this is the real end of all this. It's to silence you. It's to silence the gospel. And we know the gates of hell will never prevail, right, but that's where they're going with this.
Right. And, well, haven't we heard another advisor, Klaus Schwab, talk about the AI Bible and reimagining it? Harari.
That's right.
Yeah. So we have these elements here, the Pact for the Future. There's also the Global Digital Compact.
Yeah, so the Global Digital Compact was attached to the Pact for the Future as an annex, and it does a lot of different things, right? One of the big takeaways from there is everything needs to be digital. They want everything happening online so that the data can be gathered, so that the data can be analyzed by artificial intelligence, and so then the data can be weaponized against us. And that's very clear from this document. It also purports to govern artificial intelligence. And this is interesting because this was a proposal thought up by the regime in Beijing in cooperation with the U.S. government. They want to make sure that AI is used for the benefit of globalism, for the benefit of technocracy, rather than for the benefit of humanity, for the proliferation of liberty, for the spread of the gospel. And so they're taking action early, while AI technology is still pretty much in its infancy, to try to steer the course that that will develop to make sure it doesn't get used for purposes that they don't want it used for. And so they're already setting up the global governance structures that will take control of all of this.
Alex, there is also a third component, and this was the Declaration on Future Generations. And I want to hear just a quick clip here from the UN Secretary General as he was talking about this in his opening comments as well. This is Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Respect for human rights, cultural diversity, and gender equality are woven into all three agreements. In the face of a surge in misogyny and the rollback of women's reproductive rights, governments have explicitly committed to removing the legal, social, and economic barriers that prevent women and girls from fulfilling their potential in every sphere.
That's spooky enough here, Alex, and he said this is woven all throughout the documents.
Yes, and he's right. It is. Anybody who reads them will see that. And, you know, when he talks about reproductive freedom, the UN's very good at using doublespeak, as George Orwell identified it in his book 1984. When they talk about reproductive freedom, they don't mean, like, the freedom to choose who you're going to mate with and marry and have children with. They mean murdering your baby, just to be very clear here. They're talking about abortion there. When they talk about peace operations, they're talking about deploying soldiers with guns and attack helicopters and tanks, right? UN troops. It really is very Orwellian. And so you have to kind of understand what they mean with these terms when they talk about gender equality. They're talking about radical feminism, the dismantling of the family, the moving of women out of the home into the workforce so that the children can then be raised by government. They see that as one of the top priorities right now. Even when they talk about human rights, which is a term that I think normal people have some affection for, they don't mean what you think they mean, right? They mean literally the opposite of what our founding fathers meant. Our founding fathers got their ideas from the Bible and from great Christian theologians who had spent a lot of time thinking about these things. That's why they said that God gave us our rights. God gave you a right to life when he said, thou shalt not murder. God gave you a right to property when he said, thou shalt not steal. God gave you a right to pursue happiness and to liberty when he said you shouldn't be man-stealing, that you have a right to do X, Y, and Z. You have an obligation to do these things. What the UN means with the term human rights is quite literally the opposite. These are privileges that are bestowed upon you by international agreements, by the UN, by your government. They can be restricted under virtually any pretext. And if you read Article 29, they can never be used contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. So they mean something very different. And once you understand kind of the UN lexicon, what their words mean when they say them, all of this takes a very, very dark turn.
And friends, let me also quote here from Action Number 34. It's Parent B in this. Action 34 and in the 60th paragraph, accelerate efforts to achieve universal health coverage to ensure that all young people enjoy the highest attainable standards of physical and mental health, including immunizations and vaccinations and sexual and reproductive health, and address all the challenges faced by developing countries in achieving these goals. Alex, gone would be a country that says, sorry, you cannot, kill your unborn child in the womb. This would give them dictatorial powers over every nation of the world in aspects like that.
Absolutely right. Yep. And this is a very common tactic that they use. We were talking about education earlier. We have the same kind of situation with education. They say in the UN Declaration on Human Rights that all children have a human right to an education. And it says that education shall further the objectives of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. So that means if the education you are giving your children does not further the objectives of the United, or excuse me, the activities of the United Nations, is what Article 26 says, then you're depriving your child of his or her human rights. If you won't let people murder their babies, you're depriving them of their human rights. It's monstrous.
Alex Newman is our guest here today on Crosstalk. We're talking about the Symbol of the Future. It is global governance on steroids. Friends, we're going to learn more about the mechanism. What about that vote? Is that binding upon us as a nation? Where do we go from here? Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
If you're like most individuals, you look forward to your vacation. Many will take great effort to consider a destination the family will enjoy, what to do, where to stay, and what highways to take to get there. Sadly, most people spend more time planning their one-week vacation than they do preparing for eternity. The Bible says our life is but a vapor. None of us has the promise of tomorrow, and our eternal destiny is sealed at death. Wouldn't it be wise to investigate these things? That's the purpose of the book, Preparing for Eternity. In this book, author Mike Gendron contrasts the truth of God's Word with the teachings and traditions he was taught for over 30 years in the Roman Catholic Church. He found that eternal life is not merited by good works, but is given freely by God's grace to those who put their faith and trust in the Lord Jesus Christ as their all-sufficient Savior. The book, Preparing for Eternity, is available for a donation of $17 or more to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, really warning about this summit of the future that is now in our rearview mirror, global governance on steroids. Alex Newman with us today on the program. He was there. He was in attendance. And Alex, I don't know. I've watched the full Secretary General speech more than once, and I found it very interesting that near the end, all of a sudden, did he start speaking another language where they needed an interpreter?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I didn't catch that, but that is entirely possible.
Yeah.
He's, of course, a native of Portugal, and it could have been that he went back to his native Portuguese, and he also speaks Spanish pretty well. We heard him talking to the president of Colombia in Spanish.
So. It was very odd because all of a sudden the English turns off and on comes an interpreter, and you can hear some other language being spoken in the background, which is really odd near the end of his address. So what is the status of this? So, all the member nations, by majority, it wasn't even a vote. I mean, they just came along and affirmed this?
Yeah, so I think they are deliberately creating confusion here because they want confusion. And they look upon it, many of them, as a treaty, but they recognize that they have a real problem when it comes to the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Mm-hmm. Constitution requires that all treaties be ratified by the advice and consent of the Senate. They need two-thirds of U.S. senators present to be able to push something like this through and make it binding. And so they've created all these new terms like pact and agreement and accord and things like this that serve to obfuscate. Now, depending on who you talk to, there's a lot of different views on what this means. I reached out to House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Mike McCaul and asked him for his take, and he said, well, this is non-binding. He says it's a terrible idea, advances left-wing priorities, we shouldn't have done it, et cetera, but he said it's non-binding. I reached out to Professor of International Law Francis Boyle at the University of Illinois, one of the top experts on international law in the United States. He actually was number one in his class at international law at Harvard University College of Law. And he said, no, this is absolutely a treaty, even though they're not calling it a treaty. And so if they want to work on this, they really should legally get it ratified by the U.S. Senate. But it looks like what they're planning to do is what Obama pioneered, and actually, to be fair, George H.W. Bush with Agenda 21, where they just call these things agreements and then implement them through the executive branch without the knowledge and consent and even specific authority from Congress. So it looks like that's what they're going to be doing with the Pact for the Future.
Well, we know also that we have, at the United Nations Security Council, the United States has a veto vote in that, as do some other nations as well. This kind of erases that as well, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And, people need to be paying attention to this stuff. These things are so big and so significant, and they're not hearing anything about it. So we need a lot more people
right.
talking about this so that we get the answers that we need.
And Alex has written on this, friends. You'll find his columns at thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. And friends, I mean, just, go on the web and look at Summit of the Future. You can go right to their website and print the documents. This is not some conspiracy theory that's out there. Alex, are being very open as to what their intent is in all of this.
Yeah, they are. And that's one of the most remarkable things. As you read this document over and over again, it says we're going to strengthen global governance, right? This is terminology that even a few years ago they wouldn't have used because it would have raised mm-hmm. so many alarms from so many different quarters. But it seems like they're now getting closer to the final phase of this, where they're just coming out of the closet. And you know, it used to be, oh, we would never do that. What are you, some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist?
Right.
Now it's, well, of course we're doing that. Why wouldn't you want that? What are you, some kind of extremist? So the rhetoric has shifted very dramatically, and I think it's a very ominous sign.
What is the enforcement mechanism for this?
Well, there's several different enforcement mechanisms. One of the things that's really interesting about the Pact for the Future is that it commits all member states of the United Nations to be bound by and to respect the decisions of the International Court of Justice, which they're trying to turn into a kind of international Supreme Court, if you will. So it says all states, all nations, must be bound by the decisions of the International Court of Justice. Now, is the UN going to send its army if Donald Trump says we're not paying attention? Probably not, right? But as these things get entrenched in the legal processes, the judicial processes of governments and countries around the world, it's very much like what Richard Gardner, Assistant Secretary of State, said in the magazine of the Council on Foreign Relations. It's called Foreign Affairs, back in the 1970s. He said, we're going to build the House of World Order not by using a full frontal assault on the sovereignty of nations, but rather by eroding it piece by piece. And so little by little, these things get normalized. UNESCO comes up with a new policy proposal that's gradually implemented by all governments around the world in their education system. The UN comes up with some new formula for reducing carbon emissions that eventually governments adopt into their legal systems. And then eventually you get some kind of big crisis. We were talking about the emergencies protocol earlier, and the Secretary General comes out and says, well, hey, we have an emergency, and I'm the only one who can coordinate this response at the international level, and so now everybody needs to respect me. So the UN already has a police force. They're bringing all the national police chiefs of the world together through a program called UN COPS. They've got their international peacekeeping forces that they can and do deploy around the world all the time, famous around the world for raping women and children, vile, vile operation. And little by little, this all kind of turns the United Nations into the equivalent of a government. I encourage people to look at the institutions of the UN and then compare them to the institutions of a government. We have an EPA, the UN has a UN Environment Program. We have a Supreme Court, the UN has an International Court of Justice. We have a Department of Defense, the UN has a Department of Peacekeeping. We have a Department of Education, the UN has a UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. We have a Department of Health and Human Services, the UN has a World Health Organization. So little by little, these institutions are strengthened and strengthened and strengthened until one day they call the shots.
No pun intended. Alex, you mentioned the name of Donald J. Trump, and need to point out that these globalists are very concerned about a second Trump presidency.
They are terrified of a second Trump presidency, and I think for good reason. When Donald Trump was president last time, he was I call him a human wrecking ball when it came to the architecture of global governance. I mean, he went in there like a bull in a china shop, pulled us out of the UN Paris Agreement, pulled us out of the World Health Organization, pulled us out of UNESCO, the UN Education Agency, pulled us out of the UNRWA, which lately has been exposed for its Hamas members murdering Jews on October 7th, slapped criminal sanctions on the International Criminal Kangaroo Court that they want to turn into a court to prosecute all of us. So he did massive amounts of damage in a very short time period to the institutions of the UN and global government. And I suspect in a second term we would see that and then some, and that has a lot of people, not just in the UN, but even in a lot of the UN's member states, very concerned that the international liberal order that they talk about is in danger.
We know at past UN meetings, people were even talking about how to Trump-proof their nations. And no doubt they're trying to put mechanisms into place, as they did even with the Paris Accord, so to speak, where it took a couple of years for him to pull us out of that deal, the Paris Treaty there. And is that same element going on here as well, that they're trying to make it Trump-proof?
No question. Yeah, that's one of the big focuses right now of not just the UN, but also NATO and the World Bank. And they're all trying to figure out, okay, worst case scenario, Trump becomes president. How do we keep our heads down so that he doesn't notice us and survive the next 4 years so that we can come back stronger once he's gone? And we asked a lot of people about this at the conference, and I can tell you, people do not even want to think about it, but they're having to because they know there's a real prospect that Donald Trump comes back and that the that their agencies, their budgets, their prestige are all going to be on the chopping block.
Our phone number to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829. Your questions or brief comments, 800-733-9829. Alex, the natural question many have is, what can be done? And we know prayer is at the top of the list. We need to be fervent in prayer always for our leaders, for our nation, for our families, for the condition of the church, and so on. Are there additional things individuals can do to be salt in our society around us as well?
Absolutely, and I would echo your comments. Prayer is one of the most important things we can be doing, and it's actually a command. God commanded us to pray for our leaders. That includes the leaders that we may not necessarily agree with, maybe even the ones that we don't like. So yes, we must absolutely be in prayer about all these things, and we should be praying for wisdom and discernment because we are in some very, very interesting times. There is a lot of opposition growing, and I'll tell you, I'm a little bit surprised by it. Just in the last couple of weeks, we had 26 governors sign a public letter and a public statement saying they were not going to be obeying any UN World Health Organization decrees, directives, recommendations on anything having to do with health. They said, you know, these are not powers of the federal government. How can the federal government pretend to be delegating them to someone else? They don't even have that power to begin with. So in our states, those things are not going to be obeyed. I think that's a very, very encouraging development. In the week before the Summit of the Future took place, you had a press conference just outside Capitol Hill put on by the Sovereignty Coalition. There was quite a few congressmen there. I was actually invited to speak, but I was out of the country. And they actually denounced this Pact for the Future and the Summit for the Future in very strong terms. They said it's an attack on our sovereignty. We're not going to stand for it. We must stop it. And so they're now, a lot of these congressmen are working on devising ways to neutralize this, defund the operations of this thing, et cetera. There are actually, for the first time in American history that I know of, there are two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, to get us out of the United Nations entirely. It's called the Defund Act, and it would cut all of our ties with the UN. No more money. They'd have to remove their headquarters from our soil. Very, very significant bill, and it's very significant that we have this in both houses. We also have, even at the county level now, you have county sheriffs and county commissions getting together and saying, we're not going to accept any kind of UN interference in our counties. You've got more and more states now passing laws against the UN. Louisiana, just a few months ago, passed a powerful law. And actually it was passed through the Senate unanimously. Even the Democrats voted in favor, saying that we are not going to be obeying the UN and any of their recommendations, directives, whether it be on health care or anything else. And even a decade before that in Alabama, unanimous vote in the House and Senate saying the UN's sustainable development plans are not allowed in the state of Alabama. Nobody may participate on implementing these. So these are all things that we can do to expose and resist. And I think step one, really, is we need to raise awareness about these things.
Yeah.
Because most Americans, most of our neighbors have no idea.
Raise awareness and then contacting those units of government from county sheriffs to your state legislators, your governors, your members of the House, your Senate as well. And certainly to bathe this in prayer, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to the phone lines here today on Crosstalk. Linda is calling from Pasco, Washington. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. My concern, you were just addressing it, really, but I'm just was wondering if there are any efforts being made to address this issue directly to Mr. Trump and his group.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Trump knows a lot about this. In fact, I'm in communication with some of his key people, and we've been in discussions about this. There are people who are ready, willing, and able to assist him should he be reelected to start working on the legal maneuvers necessary the moment he steps into the Oval Office, getting us out of the WHO, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, this is not, unfortunately, an issue that is really at the front of people's minds, so I don't think we're going to see Trump going out and campaigning about these things, but he certainly is aware, and as he showed in his last term, he's very serious about protecting American sovereignty and protecting our freedoms.
So, friends, education is so critical. I mean, find Alex's articles, share those with others. Today's program will be posted up on our website within just a couple of hours. Take the link, put it out through your social media channels, get it out to others. If you want a hard copy, CD copy, to cover our duplicating and postage expense, we do ask for a donation of $6 to send it to you. You can order multiple CDs through our website or through calling our switchboard at 800-729-9829 and obtain CD of today's program to share with others. But otherwise, it'll be posted free of charge up on our website. Just take the link, share it with others as well. As the prophet Hosea said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewtube.com. So Israel has begun its official invasion into Lebanon. Last week, the head of Hezbollah was taken out by Israel. Many people rejoiced, and then some questioned, is this appropriate behavior for Christians? Well, the Bible makes it clear that vengeance belongs to the Lord. Leave it to the Lord. But at the same time, there's a difference between vengeance and justice. Romans 13 tells us that one of the functions of government is to make a just and stable society, and when necessary, to bring about capital punishment. In fact, it says that the government does not bear the sword in vain. Military action against a leader that is and has been involved in murdering its own people is the biblical function of government and a military, according to Scripture. So yes, Christians can rejoice that evil was extinguished and government carried out its godly function.
You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network, and ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake, nationalism has no place at the United Nations. They are all about globalism. They are all about control. And regardless of what your constitution says, regardless of who your public officials are, they want ultimate power, ultimate authority, ultimate control coming from the United Nations, with the Secretary General being at its head. We're going right back to the phone lines. Alex Newman is our guest today. Again, friends, check out the websites, thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. We've got Scott calling from Clarksburg, West Virginia. Scott, you're on the air.
Yeah, I got a comment. Biblically, the tribulation antichrist has to come from within before the UN Gog Magog antichrist can come from without.
Well, I don't know about that. Scripture does talk about a one world leader that is going to come on the scene. We know that that's going to happen someday. We also know, and I often go back, Alex, to the time of Jonah, where God said, you know, he's going to bring his judgment upon the city of Nineveh. And Jonah went out and said, 40 days, Nineveh is going to be destroyed. But the people turned and they repented. And as a result, God withheld his judgment at that time. And it is important for us to know that, yes, ultimately, that there is going to be a one-world leader someday, the one known as Antichrist, but we also have this opportunity to be salt and light in this time. We're here, Alex, for such a time as this.
Absolutely, we are. And yes, I think it's important to consider eschatology in all of this, and I think it's very important to study biblical prophecy. In fact, I do. But also, there are very clear biblical commands that deal with these things. So for me, in my capacity as a journalist, I always go to Ephesians 5:11. That's been my motto since I came to the Lord while I was in journalism school. The Apostle Paul writes that we should have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather we should reprove them. A lot of translations, including the ESV, use the word expose them. And so we have an obligation to expose wickedness. We have an obligation to stand against wickedness. We have an obligation to stand against a lot of the very things that the UN is advocating for here, such as abortion, such as the destruction of nation states. We also have an obligation to be good stewards. God has made us stewards of the things that he has blessed us with. That includes our family. That includes the resources he's blessed us with. And I would argue it certainly includes the country he has blessed us with. What kind of Christians would we be if we took what we were so blessed to inherit, what we were so blessed to receive from God, this incredible free nation that has allowed the gospel to go forth to every corner of the world, if we just frittered it all away and said, meh, not my problem. I'm not interested in even speaking out. We have a duty, I think, to stand against evil, to be salt and light, and I think that very much means standing against this kind of evil that we're talking about, It was God's design to divide the world up into nations. He says so repeatedly. It's in Deuteronomy 32. It's in Acts chapter 17. What we see here is a diabolical effort to undermine God's design, not just his design for nations, but his design for family, his design for life, his design for the economy. And we as Christians, if we as Christians who know the truth don't share the truth with the fallen world, how in the world can we expect the fallen world to understand it?
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Diane in Texas. Diane, you're on the air.
I'm calling from Waxahachie, Texas. And I have noticed, like with Hurricane Helene, that was one of the largest hurricanes ever in history. And I've noticed in Sky, and I have sent pictures to geoengineering.org and even to my state rep, Brian Harrison, of the spraying going on right over my house. And
okay, let's talk about this UN document. Do you have a question pertaining to it?
I'm just getting around to this.
We're short on time. Go right to your question, please.
Yeah, to the control that these the globalists have on everything that we do. Mm-hmm. Now, how can they not adopt this when the Democrats are mostly bought by the globalists?
Okay.
They're all in cahoots. They all chime together. They do the same thing.
I'm going to have Alex. We're short on time here, Diane, so forgive me. But, Alex, your response to her question there.
Well, it's true that, unfortunately, many of the Democrats are bought by the interests that are trying to do this. It's also, unfortunately, true of many of the Republicans, as much as we wish it weren't so. But, I think part of the blame rests squarely on us as Christians. In this country, on paper, we the people are in charge. So the people in Congress are called our representatives for a reason. Now, we can debate election integrity. I obviously have very serious concerns about that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, they represent us. And if we are a wicked and corrupt and immoral people, we should expect those who represent us to be wicked and corrupt and immoral.
Yeah.
So we need to bring righteousness back. We need to bring justice back. And once we as Americans are back on the right path, then we can expect, hopefully, our representatives to do the same. But we do have a lot of work in front of us. It's true, unfortunately, that large swaths of the Democrat Party are up to no good. But unfortunately, it's equally true of the Republican Party, although they often use different rhetoric on the campaign trail.
Chuck in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have heard. I did not catch the beginning of the program, didn't know about the UN document, but a call-in talk show. A gentleman called in. He was in Tiananmen Square the same time Tim Walz was in Tiananmen Square. They were there in a group of Americans, and there was a Chinese.
I understand there's dispute. But let's talk about our topic today here, Chuck.
Yeah, I did not.
Okay, thank you, Greg in Bloomington, Illinois. You're on the air.
Thank you, brothers. Regards to that summit, one of the people that the summit, the United Nations, is very much for is Kamala Harris. And Alex, I wondered if you had any comments regarding this strike that's supposed to be going on out in the East, and supposedly there's going to be a setup to where Kamala is going to appear to rescue us from that strike. Just wanted to get any comments on
that. Okay. Thank you, Greg.
Well, I have not heard that specifically, but it is not outside the realm of possibility that we would see a kind of orchestrated crisis where then our supposed political saviors would step in and save the day. This is actually not a new strategy. If you go back and you read the great French lawmaker and philosopher Frédéric Bastiat, he identified this over 200 years ago, this tendency of tyrants to create the poison and the antidote, as he called it, in the same laboratory. And we see that so frequently used today, where they manufacture a crisis or they manufacture the perception of a crisis, and then they come in with the solution that they already had intended. So those kinds of things should not be surprising. We live in a world where we are just drowning in deceit. Again, I have not heard that idea in particular, but those types of things are unfortunately all too regular occurrences in our world today.
Oh, and we've heard this, friend, so much from Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum about the global crisis. And you know what? Just so happens we've got the solution. It's us. It's our global governance to take place. Friends, you need to be informed. Share the information with others. Check out thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. Alex, thanks for being with us.
It's an honor and pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.